Did you already get those started?
Yes.
The cameras?
Yes. Gosh, I'm having a senior moment. I hate that.
It'll get worse.
Get my Prevagen.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Well, it's my favorite time of year. And we're going to talk about a little Christmas story that I wrote a few years ago. But we're going to talk about some other things that have to do with Christmas because it's that time of year. And I know the guy sitting across from me. This is one of his favorite times of year, and that is Mitchell Hollis, director of Upward Running.
Thanks for having me, Dean. I must have had a lapse in judgment this morning. I would have had my ugly Christmas sweater on this morning. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah. But I didn't even think about
Merry
that.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Yeah. Yeah, and it is. It's a great time of year, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the one time of year I feel like we can talk about Jesus. It's not that we can't talk about it other times, but it feels like society just accepts you talking about Jesus more.
Well, I mean, the studies are clear. The gospel is more... People are more receptive to the gospel during the Christmas season than any other time of the year. That's why it's such a big opportunity.
Yeah.
Because even if you know, it's hard to say you don't like all that Jesus talk that people, you know, society seems to be moving that way. And at the same time, they have a Christmas tree up in their house. It's kind of hard to square that. So, you know, that indicates to me that there's something inside there.
For
people to celebrate Christmas, whether you're obvious about it or not, you're acknowledging the birth of Christ.
Yeah.
I feel.
I
mean, it's a great opportunity time of year to really share the gospel with people and to just be joyful. I mean, I think as Christians, we should be as joyful the other 11 months out of the year as we are during Christmas.
For sure.
So, yeah.
And that's hard to do. But so I know you love Christmas decorations.
I do.
And you like to get them up nice and early.
I do.
It was Halloween this year.
October's great.
Yeah.
Even though I had dinner with someone last night, they did them in September this year.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like, you're making me look bad.
Yeah.
But it's because they have grandkids. They say grandkids is what changed it. She was always after Thanksgiving, but her grandkids wanted to put them up early. And she's like, how do you say no to the grandkids?
I totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree.
Maybe that'll be the straw that puts Holly before Halloween.
Maybe so.
And believe me, I'll be paying our grandkids to go tell Grandma that you...
So aside from Christmas decorations, what else is it that you just love about Christmas?
I just love pageantry. I don't know... I mean, it's other times of the year, but especially during Christmas, it's just the traditions. You know, I'm a creature of habit. You know that, and it really comes out. I love traditions. For the past 20 years or so, I have seen Santa Claus come in on a shrimp boat in Apalachicola, Florida, the Friday after Thanksgiving. If you want to find me, go to the dock in Apalachicola. When Santa is scheduled to come in on the shrimp boat, and that's where I'll be standing.
Yeah.
And so just the pageantry, the movies, the music. We went out to dinner last night and they had Christmas music playing out on the street. It's just, I don't know. But this year I stepped it up a notch. You know, a few years back I won we were doing the gift swap thing at a Christmas party for our Sunday school, and I won a leg lamp, and it was sitting right behind you. I have it somewhere more prominent now.
Yeah, of course.
So that was a big win in the white elephant. Well, this year I stole something probably not as good, but it's my favorite because it drives everybody crazy in my house. No! I want a no button. And if you're watching online, I'm holding it up, but it's
no.
And so I've always said that no is a complete sentence. You know, as a society, we need to learn that sometimes. So this was probably my best in the past few years. This is my, and I stole it from you.
You did, yeah.
This has
yeah.
been my best white elephant steal of the past few years. So
well, good.
It's going to stay right here on my desk. And, you know, when Holly wants to come in and up the clothing budget for the month, I'll just, you know. No, not really. But I don't know. What about you? What are your favorite things of Christmas time?
I just like the getting together with family, mm-hmm. and you see more of your family during Christmas. And I'll tell you what else I like about Christmas has nothing to do really with Christmas itself, mm-hmm. is that I always get in a big week of running the week of Christmas, mm-hmm. between Christmas and New yeah. Year's, because there's not a whole lot going on during right. that time. And so I could get out and run for, you know, forever. Sure. I think I have gotten over 100 miles, like maybe 5 or 6 weeks of my whole life.
Yeah.
And probably at least half of them were that week.
Really?
Between Christmas and New Year's. Yeah. So that's.
So speaking of long running, you haven't even asked, Lane did his first marathon this past weekend.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I don't know that I realized he was doing that.
He's doing the marathon this past weekend. He's doing 50 miles this coming weekend.
Okay.
So he back to back, you know, I don't know if that's the smartest thing, but he just wanted to, because he'd never run over 17 miles. As many miles as that kid has run in his life,
yeah,
he's never run over 17 miles. So he did the marathon. And I had been telling him, I think you had even told him, it's a different world.
Yeah.
It's a different world when you get out there past 20. And I didn't go with him. He had some buddies, and Christian was on the bike, and Landon, some of the cross-country guys from UTC, they wound up running it with him. Two of the guys from UTC ran it with him. And Holly and I were here, and we were cooking dinner so they could all come in and eat. And he walked through the door, and he said, that was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Not surprising.
So, and then he went through the whole mental cycle of, you know, he's like, I just don't know about that 50 miles next weekend. That's going to be the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I'm like, yeah, it is. But it was amazing. The next day, you know, he had all the doubts late Saturday night, but by Sunday morning he was feeling the soreness, but he was mentally, he was like, okay, yeah, I can handle this.
Yeah,
so
yeah, well, I didn't realize he was gonna do that. Okay, well, good.
Yeah.
How did he run it, sort of hard, or how did he do
no,
it?
No, he, I think they averaged 8.5 maybe. Oh,
okay.
Like that. I think he did 3:30.
Okay, but he still had trouble at 20 miles.
Yeah, so, I mean, he just said it got so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's as sore as he thought he would be. Until a few weeks ago, he was still running 70 miles a week. So,
yeah.
That's it's fine. In there. He's just never experienced what we all know is out there beyond 20 miles. And I said, that's going to seem like a cakewalk next weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think he's doing it Saturday. He's doing the 50 mile this Saturday.
Okay.
So are you still planning to do some of it with him?
Well, I didn't know when he was doing it. But okay. If he's doing it Saturday, then I better get ready for that.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
I'll, you know how Lane is. He don't call and tell anybody anything.
Good thing I didn't register for that race this weekend. I was thinking about registering for.
Oh, really?
For. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know that race, that the Red Clay race that's right down the road from my house, is this weekend.
Okay.
So they had to move it up this year.
He graduates UTC Saturday morning, and then he's going to come back here and head out. So
he's going to do it in the afternoon. It's going to be dark by the time he gets through.
Oh, he wants it to be dark.
Okay.
For whatever reason, he likes that. So.
All right.
Yeah. We'll have to talk to him after this podcast.
That's fine. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, you know, there's a lot of people who struggle this time of year during Christmas time for various reasons. My mother, for example, her grandfather passed away on Christmas Day. Mm. And so Christmas was always really tough on her. A lot of times we lose people, and whether we lose them at Christmas time or not, we really miss them at Christmas time. So
there's a void there.
Yeah. So what do we say to people who struggle a little bit through Christmas?
I don't know that there's a lot you can say.
Yeah.
I think it's being there.
Yeah.
It's intentionally including them, and you think about that person that doesn't have any family. Maybe they're an older spouse that their husband passed away or their wife passed away, and it's It's reaching out to those people that you may not come in contact with much during the year, but you know that there's a void in their life, and it's including them into your family. Like, you know, there's one individual that we're going to be inviting over for our Christmas that some things have happened in their family, and you just need to be intentional about reaching out to those people, because they, for sure, they struggle this time of year. But to answer your question, I don't know that there's much you can say. It's the things you do.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. Well, Christmas movies. You mentioned Christmas movies a little while ago. You love Christmas movies.
And I haven't got my two in yet this year.
You haven't gotten your two?
Of course, it's only the 11th when we're recording this, so I've got time.
So your two favorite Christmas movies?
Elf and It's a Wonderful Life.
All right. So you don't like black and white movies, but you like It's a Wonderful Life.
It's the pageantry.
Yeah.
I refuse to watch it in color.
Yeah.
It's like I won't watch The Wizard of Oz in color. I mean, it's...
What? The Wizard of Oz was in color. You're thinking of a different movie, because The Wizard of Oz was in color.
What am I thinking of?
That was one of the first movies that was in color. I'm not sure what other movie you may be thinking of, but Wizard of Oz, that was one of the amazing things about that movie. Well, it's black and white at the beginning, and then it turns to color when she gets to the Land of Oz. And then it goes back to black and white at the end when
maybe that's what's confused me. Yeah. Like the old Andy Griffiths. I won't watch those, you know, later the years they versions. Were in color ones.
Yeah.
And see, so yeah, I won't watch It's a Wonderful Life, because you know they have them in color now.
Yeah, they do.
And I just
got to watch the black and white version.
It's the tradition.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you there. And It's a Wonderful Life is probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite too, I think. I saw a movie, though. We saw this for the first time last year. The movie is called Christmas Story, not A Christmas Story, you know, the Red Ryder BB Gun mm-hmm. movie, but another movie called just Christmas Story. And it's made by a bunch of people in Finland. So it's a foreign film, but it's this story. It's a possible origin of Santa Claus, basically, is what it is. Hmm. And it's kind of a... It's almost like it's a realistic, this really could have happened kind of thing that is just really, really heartwarming. So if you're out there and you haven't seen Christmas Story, look that up and find the funny names that are associated with it, and you'll realize that's the one.
Because mm-hmm.
there's a lot, I think there's more than just a couple of movies that have the words Christmas Story in them. I really like that one. So you might want to check that one out.
Now, you and Debbie, though, y'all take it to extreme on the Christmas movies. You sent me a list the other day.
Yeah, we watch 50 to 60 movies a year, Christmas movies a year. So we watched one last night.
All in the month of December, November.
Well,
December.
We start in November.
Okay.
But we've already watched over 20
really?
So far this year.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we watched one last night. Yeah. And I love the one we watched last night, too.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, that's one of the things about Christmas I love is the movies.
Yeah.
Do you have any obscure Christmas movies that you've seen that you think, that one's better than what people think it is? Not really?
You know, I just haven't watched a lot of them.
Yeah.
I watch the ones that I like over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell people, as far as it's Elf Trivia, the movie Elf, a trivia game, I think I could go toe-to-toe with anybody.
Yeah, you probably could.
I mean, because, you know, we started watching it when our kids were little, and we watched it pretty much every year. Sometimes when our kids were little, we'd watch it multiple times
a year. Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, I like Elf. It's definitely a good one.
Yeah.
What about food? What's the ultimate Christmas meal? You know, at my house, we have a tradition on Christmas Day. We invite all the families and the grandkids and everybody over to our house, and they come a little after lunch, so they have time to have their regular Christmas at home that morning. But then we have breakfast in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I cook 6 pounds of bacon, a couple of boxes of sausage, and we make some gravy. We have gravy and biscuits, and we have eggs, and we have bacon, and of course, we have some fruit and stuff with it, but...
just to make you feel good.
Yeah, I guess so. Not the healthiest meal, but I love it.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to change it.
Yeah, I guess it's not a particular thing. Every year, my mom, we have Christmas is my side of the family, and she'll go buy whatever the meat is, and my job is to smoke it. So this year, I think she's getting 2 7-pound beef tenderloins,
oh.
And I'm going to smoke them whole. But it changes every year. I've done prime rib, turkey, done ham. Yeah, we change it up.
That's cool.
Usually. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So every year it's, what's the meal going to be this year?
Yeah.
That's
what are we smoking this year?
Yeah. What about snow? Would you want a white, you know, we live in an area where I think we had one white Christmas back in 2010. We had like 6 inches of snow on Christmas.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
It was a real good one.
Yeah. But other than that, we typically don't get snow. But if we could get snow, would you want a white Christmas?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that year was pretty special because we weren't expected to get that much.
Yeah.
I think it surprised everyone. I think we thought we were getting something. But you know, that's how it is around here.
It is.
You know, in North Georgia, every time they say it's going to snow, it doesn't. And then every time they say, oh, we might get a dusting, we get a blizzard,
yeah.
You know, like 93. Yeah. But yeah, I love snow this time of year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my favorite kind of snow is the kind that falls on Friday, lays all day Saturday, and an overnight before Sunday just clears up for the weekend, and so you're back to normal on Monday.
That's
my kind of stuff. We've had that a few times.
Yeah.
So was your family one of those families who kind of went crazy during Christmas, bought a whole bunch of gifts and went wild, or were you kind of one of those more subdued?
We do gifts. We don't go crazy on the gifts. I mean, as far as my side of the family, we've actually moved to the pick a name, you know.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, we draw a name out of the hat, and that's who you buy for. When the kids were growing up, we still bought for all the kids. But, yeah, we've just never – I want to say Holly and I have only bought things for each other just a few times because we just
– Yeah.
I mean, we're so blessed nowadays. It's just – You know,
don't need a whole lot.
We don't.
Yeah.
And we just like, when the kids were growing up, it was fun to watch the kids doing everything they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, gifts has never been a huge part of our Christmas.
But it is fun to give gifts.
It is.
It's always cool when you can find the right gift too for the right person. That's always a cool thing to do. Some people do a lot better job at that than others.
Yeah.
Some years I'm hit on that, and some years I'm miss. But
yeah, I mean, like whoever bought the snow button, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah,
and it's probably what $3.99.
Yeah,
like
probably.
That.
Yeah.
But I will, and that leg lamp. You know, it's those. I guess I'm a little weird with gifts. I want things that I wouldn't normally buy. I would like to have it, but I would never go to the store and buy this.
Right. Right.
But I would love to have one.
Which makes it the perfect gift.
Which makes it the perfect gift.
Absolutely.
It's something that somebody would like to have, but they wouldn't actually go buy it.
Yep.
Because nowadays, think about it. If somebody needs it or wants it,
they just go
buy it.
Yeah.
Amazon, it could be here tomorrow.
Yep. It's true. Well, the important thing about Christmas, obviously, is that we're celebrating Jesus and the birth of Jesus.
Sure.
And the second chapter of Luke tells the Christmas story. Now, this won't be as good as Linus reading it on the Peanuts.
Not even close.
But this is the Christmas story as Luke wrote about it almost 2,400 years ago now. So you want to read Romans 2, Luke 2.
Luke 2. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for the census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for a baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no lodging available for them. That night there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. and you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger. Suddenly, the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in highest heaven, and peace on earth to those whom God is pleased." When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." They hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. After seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherd's story were astonished, but Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. The shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told them.
Don't you love it when God orchestrates things so perfectly?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing, the whole Christmas story. This, by the way, is the New Living Translation. Mm-hmm. If you
that's
heard
not
it,
what I'm used to reading it.
Right. Yeah. I could tell. And that's but I thought it would be interesting to hear it from that perspective. I have been listening to the Bible in a year this year, mm-hmm. the New Living Translation. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it gives you just a slightly different mm-hmm. look and feel to it.
Well, I was thinking about this as I was reading. It's easier to read. But it's not easier to read a scripture like this, which I've grown up listening to in the King James or the New King James.
Yeah.
So you have betrothed and pondered and
that's right.
all these things, and not the words that they're using. So, but it is more clear in this version. It's easier to understand.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things, I always try to find something about this story different every year. I try to find something interesting. So there were a couple of things. First of all, you know, Caesar Augustus, he was the Roman emperor, and it talks about that. He was there from 31 BC to 14 AD. So he was there for, 45 years? Mm-hmm. He was the Roman emperor. And that means the emperor had over two decades prior to Jesus's birth to do a census. Mm-hmm. He had never done a census. Mm-hmm. This was the first time that just happened to fall in the ninth month of Mary's pregnancy.
Sure.
Just by coincidence.
Right.
But the way God works these things out ahead mm-hmm. of time is just, it's amazing that happened then. I also love that God chooses the shepherds, you know, to show this big production to with the angels and all of that. Because, you know, what the shepherds were doing, those shepherds out there in the fields, they were bringing up perfect lambs that were mm-hmm. going to be used for sacrifice. Mm-hmm. They understood that. And, of course, Jesus is the perfect sacrifice.
Sure.
And I had never heard this before, but, of course, we know that a manger is like a feeding trough, and Jesus, that's where Jesus was lying as a baby, which, you know, is awfully humbling. But the other thing that I thought was interesting was that I found this thing with talking about how the we call them swaddling clothes mm-hmm. and being wrapped up tightly. What was a lot? I've lost my train of thought. I'm gonna pause here and cut that out. I don't remember what I was.
Was it the strips of cloth?
It was something about that, but I can't remember now what it said. I just remember there being something.
Yeah, I remember there being something. There's something about the strips.
Something about him being wrapped up tight.
Yeah.
I know what it was. So these strips of cloth that the baby Jesus is wrapped up in is a lot like when they had a lamb who was perfect. Mm-hmm. What they would do is they would take that lamb and they would wrap the lamb up mm-hmm. and take them to the market because they didn't want there to be a blemish, something to happen in transport.
It was like bubble wrap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I'd ever heard that before. That was kind of cool. So anyway, I love the story. I love you talk about pageantry. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of those things.
Well, and you got to wonder, we can never put ourselves in Mary's shoes, but you know, in the King James, the New King James, it says Mary kept these things and she pondered them in her heart. You have to wonder, I mean, I don't even remember how old Mary was at the time. She was young. Mm-hmm. All this had happened. She knew that she was obviously pregnant. She was told by an angel when she conceived that she was going to have the Son of God as a baby. And to be sitting in a, you have to think that when they showed up and they couldn't find a room, you know, they were there for the census, they couldn't find anywhere. They were being turned away everywhere they went, and they wound up coming to a manger, which we make that sound kind of romantic, you know.
Yeah.
But a manger is not. It's,
no.
If you've ever been in a real manger where cattle have calves and sheep have bad, I mean, it's anything but romantic.
Yeah.
It's
horrible. Really kind of nasty.
It's smelly. It's nasty. It's cattle feces. I mean, all around you. It's really a nasty place. And you have to think, and you know, all the visions or the scenes that we portray is Mary in a, you know, a nice gown, and she's got a white. That is probably not how it was.
Yeah.
I mean, they were covered in dirt, and you have to think, what was she thinking as she started to go into labor?
Yeah.
Was it all real?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure she had something in her head of how this was going to play out.
And it wasn't that.
It wasn't that. It couldn't have been that. And you have to think, when it says she kept all these things and pondered them in her heart, it doesn't give us any indication of what she was thinking. And it makes me think that she was thinking, is this right? There had to be doubts. And then when the shepherds came, I don't know. I don't know. And I guess that's why it's just quiet on what she was thinking.
Yeah.
There's so many question marks there.
Yeah.
Of what does it mean when it says she pondered this in her heart? Does that mean there was doubt? Does that mean there was relief? I don't know what that means.
Well, I don't some translations, I think, say she treasured these things in her heart. Right? I believe.
I've never seen that translation.
But what
does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right. I don't think we know.
Yeah.
But we do know that she seemed at that point to be contented with whatever was going on.
Sure.
That I guess she had accepted, because surely there had to be some kind of a stress in this during this time of, oh my gosh, we can't do this here.
Yeah.
But
and Joseph, if he was anything like I am, was probably freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, my wife is carrying the Son of God, and she's about, and we can't even find a room.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you wonder what he was thinking.
Yeah, can you imagine how inadequate he felt at that point?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
And so I, you know, just being around, you know, livestock in the past, Google it. Google
yeah.
up what a real manger looks like, and it's not not what we put out in front of our churches. That's not what it looks like.
That is for sure.
Yeah.
Well, every year we share a story that I wrote several years ago. It's probably my favorite thing I've ever written. And I've never told this before, but where this story came from was, you've heard of Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, I think it was their first Christmas album, was basically a story. And it told this story of this little girl. Well, it tells a story of an angel who's flying over the earth and is looking for something good to take back to God. And what he finds this girl who has run away from home. She's standing outside of a bar. She walks into the bar, and she wants to get home, but she doesn't know how to ask. She doesn't know what to do. And this angel comes down and intervenes and tells the bartender, hey, look at that girl out there. And it's just this story of her trying to get her back to where she wants to go. And I loved the story because it was a real Christmas. Mm-hmm. It was the gospel in the rawest form mm-hmm. to me. And I love that. And so I wanted to write something that was along those same lines, that was something that was a lot more raw than we normally see mm-hmm. Jesus portrayed in anything. And so that came out to me thinking about homeless people, and that came mm-hmm. to this story.
Yeah, I mean, when you sent this to me several years back and you said, hey, I wrote a story, I'm thinking about sharing it on the podcast. I mean, I feel like, Dean, you knocked it out of the park. It's why I want to do it every year. I feel like you knocked it out of the park because it's not your normal Christmas story. This is kind of more akin to It's a Wonderful Life than Elf.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a place for that. It's fun, but It's a Wonderful Life has a true, man, there's some life lessons in that. And it's the same thing with your story. It's mm-hmm. not the typical story. And so for everyone out there that hasn't heard it, I think you're going to agree that Dean really, really hit a home run with this one.
And it's called The Night That Changed Everything. Frank Blunt didn't believe in anything good, maybe not even himself. Christmas came for each of his 38 years on Earth, but he had seen nothing to persuade him that it was anything more than greed that drove the gift-giving season. He reasoned that giving only happened when there was an expectation to receive something in return. Frank didn't believe in the general goodness of the men and women he had in contact with every day of his life in the insurance business. Even as he interacted with clients, he could see the greed as they bickered about a dollar here and a dollar there. He was sure people didn't want to simply give things away for the sake of giving. There was an additional motive in each case. Frank didn't care for rich people who seemed to flaunt their wealth and only allowed the occasional crumb to fall to those who really needed it, as they lived behind walls protected from anything the world might do to infiltrate their wealthy lifestyle. Greed, indeed. But he also didn't care for poor people. Why couldn't these people get a job? They would rather beg for money on the side of the road than find a real job that required some commitment to be punctual and contribute to society. It was greed in a different form, he thought. They didn't want to endure the inconvenience of responsibility. It was lazy greed. The people who irritated him most were those Christians. They claimed to be motivated by a mystical being who lived 2,000 years ago in the form of a man called Jesus Christ. Seriously? He thought. It seemed pathetic to him that adults would behave or would believe in fairy tales. Still, Frank was sure that they were motivated by the need for recognition for the things they would do to help others. It was still greed, only fed through a need to feel less guilty about who they were. Frank Blunt believed in Frank Blunt. Good or bad, it was all he could count on. Frank's sister, Joy, had tried numerous times over the years to break through his shell of skepticism. She feared that she had never made a dent or created so much as a pinhole. The shell had proven to be very durable over the years. Still, Joy had prayed thousands of times for Frank and his salvation. If God could soften his heart even a little, maybe he could see that most people are not what he thought them to be. As Christmas approached, she asked God to give her a pick to break through that shell. But as soon as the Christmas-related conversation began, Frank would retreat to his shell and defend his feelings vehemently. "Christmas is all about giving, Frank," Joy would say. "Yeah, sure, I know. Just so people can help other people and make them feel good, right?" "It's more than that, Frank. God gave his son the most incredible gift ever given. On Christmas, we celebrate that gift, in part by giving to others. But we also simply remember the gift and celebrate what God did for us. Imagine giving your son. Can there be anything more gracious than that?" "Oh, here we go again," Frank said. "Christmas is all about greed, not some sense of benevolence. If you don't believe me, just look at how people act on Black Friday. Last year, someone shot in a dispute over a toy. The year before that, a 62-year-old woman wound up in the hospital because she was trampled at the door because people had to get to those big screen TVs that were on sale. If that's the giving spirit, then I don't want any part of it." Those words triggered a thought in Joy's mind. The giving spirit, she thought. She had an idea. She asked, "So you think there is really no such thing as the giving spirit, as you called it?" "Of course not," Frank said. "Giving is easy when you know you're going to get something in return. It's a guiltless way to accumulate more stuff. Nobody gives things away without some expectation of a return on their investment." Joy said, "I have a proposal for you, Frank." "Yeah, what is that?" "I want to challenge you to give something away." "Easy, as long as it's not my stuff I'm giving away," Frank said. "Okay, so here's my challenge. I will give you $100 to give away, but there are stipulations to who and how you give it away. First, you can only give away $5 at a time. No matter how much a person may need, you can only give them $5. You can give them less if you like, but no more than $5 per person. Second, you have to give the money to someone you believe needs it. There has to be some reason, justifiable or not, that you give the money away. Third, anyone you give the money to has to be someone that you have never met before." Joy finished. "What do you think?" "I think that's an easy assignment. I don't see the point, but if it'll make my baby sister happy for me to give her money away, then I'm more than happy to oblige," Frank said sarcastically. "And you will see, the world is full of unappreciative, greedy people. I may get a thank you or two, but only because it's the polite thing to do. In the end, you'll be out $100 and nothing will be different. But I have one stipulation of my own. Once I'm done for the rest of this year, you can't try to convince me that people are good or that there is some guy named Jesus who I need to get to know better. Deal?" "Deal," Joy exclaimed. "I'm willing to take the chance. You only have to promise me that when Jesus shows up, you will acknowledge it." "Okay, if the 2,000-year-old man shows up, I'll let you know," Frank retorted. The next day, Frank found himself wondering how he'd gotten into such a strange situation. How exactly would he identify people who needed the money? Where would he start? He had already been to the bank and exchanged Joy's $100 bill for $25 bills. 20 people, $5 each. This should only take an hour or so, he thought. Downtown. How many times had he been approached by people who were living on the street and asked for spare change? He could capture all 20 of those needy people in a few square blocks. That would be the most efficient avenue to shut his sister up for the rest of the year. As he drove to the parking lot, he identified four vagrants, as he liked to call them, along the way. He parked the car and immediately saw a group of three men huddled in the corner of the parking garage. They were sitting on upside-down buckets and seemed to be joking with each other. It seemed clear that they were only there because they were trying to keep warm by staying out of the wind. Their clothing and demeanor persuaded him that they may be homeless. They would qualify for a handout according to Joy's rules. Frank approached them and asked them if they would each like $5. One of them looked at him and said, "What's the catch?" He said, "No catch, $5, in the spirit of Christmas." "Just for free?" they asked suspiciously. "That's right," Frank confirmed. "Well, how about $20 then?" another asked coyly, confirming Frank's paradigm of a greedy world. Here he was giving money away, and it just wasn't enough. "No, just $5. He reached into his pocket, peeled off three $5 bills, and handed them out. The guys high-fived each other. He might be done in less than an hour at this rate. As he walked away from the group, he mustered up as much sarcasm as he could and said, "Merry Christmas." He left the parking facility, walking north, and found a lady on a bench laying under some cardboard trying to sleep. There was a shopping cart filled with her belongings next to her. The cart was tethered to her arm by a rope tied around her wrist. Why would people choose to live this way? Frank thought. He approached her and said, "Ma'am, can I ask you a question?" "Sure," she said suspiciously. "Could I interest you in a $5 bill?" "Oh, no, thank you," she said firmly. "Seriously, you can't use $5? "Well, of course I can, but I haven't done anything to deserve it. I can't just take your money." What if you consider it a Christmas gift? But you don't even know me. Why would you give me a gift? She had not received a Christmas gift in 2 years. I insist. He took another $5 bill from his pocket and handed it to her. She looked at the bill as if it were priceless. A tear formed in her eye and a smile on her face as she said, I prayed for this. God has sent you to me, I'm certain. Frank knew the truth, that his sister had sent him. He elected not to vocalize that fact and even wished he could give her more money. But rules were rules. Again, he said, Merry Christmas. Only this time much less sarcastically, and it may have even felt good to say it this time. He had found the one person who appreciated receiving a gift. What were the odds, he thought. He moved on and began to realize that the homeless were more difficult to find than he had thought. He walked a few blocks before seeing a man just ahead who was going from one pedestrian to another asking for money. This one would be easy. As he approached the man, he was anticipating the question. Only the question was different than he thought it would be. The man said, Could you buy me some food? I haven't had anything to eat today. So much for the rumor that all of the homeless are alcoholics looking for their next drink. Frank said, How about if I give you $5 and you can go get something to eat? He handed him the bill, looking deep into his eyes as they brightened with the news. The man smiled, and with heartfelt gratitude, he said, Oh, thank you so much, sir. Frank smiled back at him and again said, Merry Christmas. And that one felt pretty good. As Frank was about to walk off, the man said, Sir, may I ask you a question? Frank thought, Why do you have to ruin a good interaction by forcing me to have a conversation? But instead said, Sure, but I can't give you any more money. Oh, that's fine. Sir, are you an angel? Well, Frank didn't know what to say. He didn't believe there was such a thing as an angel. No, he said, surprising himself with his calmness. Why do you ask? Well, it just seems that you're different from everyone else I see on the street. You looked at me like I was somebody. Most people are always trying to do anything but make eye contact with me. They hope that I won't approach them. I wish I didn't have to, but I don't know what else to do. But you're different. You seem to be eager to help me. I thought maybe you were an angel sent by God to help me. Anyway, thank you so much for your kindness. Have a Merry Christmas. Suddenly those words, Merry Christmas, rang in his head. He had wished these poor people, down and out people, a Merry Christmas. What did they have to be merry about? He was going to go home in an hour and sleep in a warm bed tonight while these people would sleep in the cold or in a room with 50 others in a shelter somewhere. But this guy just wished Frank a Merry Christmas. The seemingly incongruous phrase was not lost on him. As he walked around the town, he had many more similar interactions and conversations. He began to feel more comfortable speaking with these people. With each one, he felt a little more compassion. He didn't know why these people were living the way they did, but one thing was sure, it's not what they would have chosen if given a better and more comfortable choice. Most of them really had no choice. The thought of having to live on the streets began to run through his mind. He didn't know if he was tough enough to do it. Many of the conversations revolved around God and angels or other spiritual matters. If these people did believe in God, and it seemed clear that they did, why would they rely so heavily on a being that had left them in the circumstances in which they were living? But even as the thought came to him, the answer bounced back quickly. Well, what else did they have? God was all they could rely on. Frank had never had so much compassion for people he didn't know. For that matter, he had never had any compassion for those he didn't know. By the time he had given out 17 of the 20 $5 bills he had in his pocket, he was losing track of time. He was enjoying the conversations and the idea of helping those who needed it. Sure, there were a few who were scammers and just looking for a few extra bucks, but the overwhelming majority of them were hurting. He began to hope that his words were soothing to them. He actually wanted to help. By this time, it had been 2.5 hours and the sun was going down. It was getting colder. he approached number 18, an older, thin, gray-haired lady who was missing her false teeth, and he gave her the money. She asked if she could pray with him. He reluctantly agreed. If it would make her feel better, he was willing to go along. She prayed, "Lord, thank you so much for sending this man my way tonight. You knew how much I needed it, and you provided. I praise your name for your goodness. Lord, bless this man. I don't know who he is, but you are surely using him tonight as your servant. I pray that even as he blesses those around him, that you will see fit to bless him with your goodness and mercy. Amen." Frank thought for a moment and couldn't think of anyone who had ever prayed with him alone before. Once again, someone with far less than most seemed to have something that he clearly did not. Though he had grown more compassionate through this process, he knew that if he were in their circumstances, he could not be as positive as many of them were. Thank you for that. I hope you have a Merry Christmas. Do you have a warm place to sleep tonight? The words startled him as they fell from his mouth. What was he going to do if she said no? But she let him off the hook and said, "I'm heading for a shelter in a few minutes. They don't open the doors until 6 p.m. "Great," he said in relief. As Frank turned in search of number 19, he noticed a man looking at him from across the street. He was clearly not one of the homeless he was looking for, but the man kept watching him. When he caught Frank looking his way, he waved and looked both ways as he crossed the street. He was headed straight towards Frank. "Oh, no," Frank thought as he wondered if he was someone of authority who was going to tell him that he couldn't do what he was doing. Was he in some sort of trouble? The man reached the other side of the street and said, "Do you have a minute, sir?" "Depends. What do you want to tell me?" Frank said with more than a hint of suspicion. The man continued, "My name is Wilbur Rexall III. I have seen what you have been doing for the last hour or so. Are you giving money to the homeless in this community? Because that's precisely what it looks like you're doing." Growing more suspicious, Frank said, "Why is that any of your business? You're not with the police department, are you? I'm not doing anything illegal, am I?" The questions kept coming to him and spilling out of his mouth. "Oh, no, sir. I own 3 businesses downtown, and I spend a lot of time people watching. I couldn't help but notice the very deliberate way you were walking from one person to another, not only giving them money, but taking time to speak with each of them for a couple of minutes. In the 30 years I have been around here, I don't believe I have ever witnessed such a display of individual generosity." Frank was put on the spot. He knew his motive for doing what he was doing had begun in far from charitable way. He was only trying to prove something to his sister. Still, he had softened his stance considerably by this time. He was much closer to the right motive by now, but he was still looking for number 20 so he could get in his nice car and drive to his warm house. "Well, just trying to help those less fortunate than myself, you know," Frank said, immediately feeling guilty for the way he took credit for what it was he was doing. It wasn't even his money he was giving away. Mr. Rexall asked, "Do you own a house?" What an odd question, Frank thought, but answered, "Yes, sir. It's about 10 miles from here." The stranger continued his line of questioning. "How much money do you owe on your house?" "Well, that's kind of a private matter, Mr. Rexall. Is that what you said your name was?" Frank was sure to reply in a manner that said, "Back off, mister." "Yes, sir. Wilbur Rexall III. I suppose it is forward of me to ask such a question out of the blue, so let me explain. The Lord has blessed me far beyond anything I could ever have expected. I grew up poor and spent time on the street just like the people you have been talking with this evening. I'm not going to live forever, and I can't take all that money with me. I would like to pay off your mortgage, sir, if you would allow it." What? What did he just say? Frank wondered if being out in the cold air for a couple of hours could alter your hearing in some way. "Excuse me?" he said. "Oh, I'm terribly sorry if I've offended you in some way. I only wanted to return the kind gesture that you are so graciously offering to these people." "No, I mean, seriously, what did you just ask me?" Frank said, still trying to gather himself. "I'd like your permission to pay off your mortgage, sir." That's what Frank thought he had heard. You can't possibly be serious, he asked incredulously. Well, yes, sir, I am being serious. As I said, I have been so blessed by God, and I feel his urging to do this for you. Frank's mind was going a million miles an hour. It was almost as if this man knew that he had been struggling to make ends meet lately. Although he was not behind on his mortgage, he had some bill collectors calling his house for other bills that were delinquent. Not having a mortgage payment would allow him to catch up every other bill he had due. That's an incredible gesture, sir, but why would you do such a thing? Frank asked. As I told you, I have a soft spot for the homeless. As a matter of fact, I own a small warehouse around the block that I open up every year when the weather gets cold so that the homeless have a place to go. I open it at 6 o'clock every night and serve them some soup or some other small meal so they can help them keep them going for the next day. For many of them, the next day is really all they have to look forward to. I see myself lying on those cots, and I know that those nights are cold, and I appreciate the man who opened up his warehouse for me almost 40 years ago. Without that man's generosity, I might have frozen to death on one of those cold nights. I also think about Mary and Joseph under similar circumstances. They had no place to stay except for the generosity of a man who offered his stable as a warm place to stay for the night. To make matters worse, poor Mary was pregnant and about to give birth. The Savior of the world was born under circumstances not far removed from the homeless shelter of today. We never know who we help. It could be a young man who would wind up owning several businesses one day, and he may decide to give back to those who helped him and those who are helping those who are like he once was. Or it could be even bigger than that. The man who offered his stable had no idea that Jesus would be born under his generosity, but that's what happened. No, sir, you have no idea who you have helped tonight with your simple gestures of money and conversation. You may have changed someone's life tonight. That, sir, is why I would do such a thing. Frank took it all in and was overwhelmed by it all. Every paradigm he had ever believed was challenged in this moment. Poor people weren't who they thought they were. Now he finds out that rich people aren't the greedy scumbags he thought they were. Even crazier, this man had him intrigued about that whole Jesus story, as crazy as it was. He wanted to know more. Do you really believe the Jesus story? It's so incredible that it seems impossible, Frank said. It not only seems impossible, it was impossible for humans. That's how we know it was God himself who wrote the story. Oh, I'm certain of the authenticity of the story. Not only do I know it is true because of what he has done for me, but if you will spend some honest time looking at the facts, you will come to the same conclusion that it has to be true. It sounds like you're not a believer. Frank answered, well, I like to think I'm a common sense guy who thinks practically. It's awfully hard to square a virgin birth with scientific reality, not to mention being raised from the dead. Mr. Rexall answered, I completely understand. I was right where you are a long time ago. It didn't make sense to me either. But that man who opened his warehouse for me all those years ago also gave me my first Bible. I was homeless and didn't have much to do besides looking for a job, so I scoured that Bible looking for loopholes at first. When I could find none, I began to see the facts. Do you know that the prophet Isaiah predicted the birth of Jesus hundreds of years before it happened, and with some detail, I might add? If the Jesus story is not true, how did that happen? Yes, sir. Being practical will only lead you to believe in Jesus. So up is down, and backwards is forwards, Frank thought. Everything he believed was wrong according to this man. He seemed to be a normal man. He had no agenda that Frank could see. In the span of a few hours, his entire life felt like it was changing. Mr. Rexall continued, if you want proof of the reality of God, look no further than the fact that you and I are standing here speaking. Do you think it is mere coincidence that I saw what you were doing this evening? Think about the conversations you had with those people this evening. Do you see God in any of those when you look at it from his perspective? I don't know what to say, sir. Yes, I do see where it is possible that a God could have coordinated what happened tonight, but it seems so crazy. Why would a God who could do so much be interested in me? I've done nothing but make fun of Christians for years. Surely he has much better things to do tonight, Frank concluded. No, Frank, he doesn't. You see, that's the most incredible thing about God. He loves every one of us, whether we love him back or not. Tonight, you were the most important person on his mind, as were billions of other people. He knew this day was coming before you were even born. We can't understand that in our finite minds, but it's true. God has always been around you, but it looks like maybe you can see him tonight. Am I right? Mr. Rexall's question pierced Frank's heart. Frank answered reluctantly, "It's hard to explain it any other way, I suppose." "Listen, Frank, I can tell you're struggling with the enormity of it all, but that's how God works. I see it all the time, and if you will too, you will too if you choose to believe and live a life for him." Frank said much more boldly now, "Honestly, this has been the most incredible night of my life. I want to have more days like this one. How do I go about doing that? What do I have to do next?" Wilbur Rexall led Frank Blunt through several verses about God's salvation plan from the book of Romans, a.k.a. the Roman Road. It still seemed impossible to Frank that he had felt so differently just a few hours prior, but after what he had seen and heard that night, he knew nothing was impossible with God. Frank drove home and couldn't wait to talk with Joy. He realized that he still had $10 of hers in his pocket. He didn't complete his assignment. Or did he? When he walked into Joy's house, he had the biggest smile she had ever seen. "Oh, no," she thought. "He must have given away all the money, and now he's happy that he doesn't have to hear any more about Jesus for the rest of the year." "Sis," Frank said, "I owe you my life." Startled by this comment, she asked, "Well, what do you mean?" "God didn't just show up tonight. He showed off," Frank exclaimed. They talked about the evening for nearly 2 hours. Eventually, as time ran off the clock, it was time to go home and go to bed. It was an incredible day that Frank would certainly never forget. It was difficult to fall asleep, but he did, only after saying a prayer before bedtime for the first time in his life. At work the next day, he was still giddy about the prior evening's activity and the result of meeting an incredible bunch of people. He couldn't stop telling everyone he met about what had happened. He wasn't very productive as the world would measure it, but God doesn't use the same measures as the world. Lunch hour came and he used the time to check his email. In the list of messages was a communication from a bank. He clicked on the message and was astounded by what he saw. As Mr. Rexall had promised, it was an email congratulating him for paying off his mortgage. In all this excitement, Frank had forgotten about the promise. But he had only told him his name and who the lien holder was on his home. How had he been able to complete the transaction so quickly? He thought he would need to give him more information if he was still going to insist on paying off his mortgage. But Mr. Rexall was apparently a very well-connected man. Frank wanted to personally thank him, not only for the debt release, but more importantly for changing his life's direction. But in all the excitement of the moment, he never asked where his office was located. Well, no matter. If he owned 3 businesses downtown, he would be able to find him. Later, he went back to the same place he saw him the day before, but he was not there. He went inside several establishments, but oddly, found no one who knew him. Frank remembered the night shelter Mr. Rexall opened. If he could find the shelter, he would almost certainly be able to find him. He went into one more place, and sure enough, a lady knew where the shelter was located. He walked 3 blocks to the shelter, entered, and looked for someone who appeared to be in charge. He found a man who was helping to serve some food, waited for a break, and asked where he could find Mr. Rexall. The man asked, "Who?" "Mr. Rexall," Frank said, "the man who owns this building." "Oh, you must be mistaken. This building is not owned by anyone with that name. I've never heard that name before." The man seemed absolutely sure of himself. "Well, that's odd. No one seems to know who Mr. Rexall is." "Thank you for your time," Frank said dejectedly. As he began to walk away, he turned and asked, "What is the man's name who owns this building if it's not Mr. Rexall?" Well, his name is Gabriel, you know, like the angel. He prefers folks call him Gabe, though. Something about not wanting to draw attention to himself. All Frank could get out was, yes, that's just like Mr. Rexall. I mean, Gabe. So Merry Christmas to all, and until next time, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light this Christmas and all through the next year.
Good job, Dean. Merry Christmas.